Well, we are in this series titled Grit, Got What It Takes. And the working definition for grit is this, that it's a positive trait that consists of these two components, perseverance and passion. And over this entire series, I'm going to be asking, six yes or no questions, but don't let the fact that they're yes or no questions fool you. These are, really, really difficult questions. And all six of these questions on the surface level are just great life leadership types of questions. So if you're at a place in your spiritual journey where you're not sure about the Bible or parts of the Bible or all the Bible, if you're not really sure about God, you got some questions, I just want you to know these six questions are going to help you in life and leadership. If you're a Christ follower, you got to realize that there's a spiritual significance to all six of these questions, that you need to wrestle through these six questions in your relationship with God. So in part one of this series, we landed on this question. Will you say yes? And I told everyone in part one, I'll tell you again, don't answer that question now. You see, you need questions 2 through 6 to help you answer question number one. And depending on how you answer questions 2 through 6 will help influence how you answer question number one. And if you missed part one of this series, or maybe you're brand new, it's first time at one of our campuses, one of our churches, or first time connecting online, I just want you to know you can always watch part one of this series and all of our series on demand. You could go to tcconline.tv. You could download our Tri-County Church app. We post the message videos on our Facebook page, both our Tri-County Church Facebook page and Element Church Facebook page. And we're so excited that Element, you guys are part of the Tri-County Church family. So please go back and watch part one, because it will help you, as we navigate through question number two. Well, this entire series, we're going to be following the storyline of Abram and Sarai. And Abram and Sarai are married, and it's amazing what God does in them and through them. And what I love about their story, like so many of the stories throughout the Bible, is their story is, imperfect. Their story is messy. They both make decisions that will leave you scratching your head, because they're horrible, ridiculous decisions. I mean, Abram makes one in the part of the story we're going to look at today that will just leave you, if you're a husband or a wife, a boyfriend, a girlfriend, I'm just going to tell you, it's going to leave you scratching your head. But more on that in a moment. But where God intersects with Abram and Sarai, it's a amazing moment, because God comes to Abram and Sarai and he says to them, go from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land I will show you. And going is kind of an exciting part. It's adventure. It's exploration. But what makes going so difficult isn't the adventure and the exploration. It's a reality that to go, you must leave. To go, you must let go. To go, you're going to leave behind. And that becomes difficult. And to intensify it all, God didn't even give Abram and Sarai the roadmap. He didn't give them the GPS coordinates. He didn't give them the 8-part strategy of what this was going to look like. He says, hey, go, and along the way, I'm going to show you. And so Abram and Sarai, they chose to enter into the land of the unknown. I think about this journey that God took them on. And you see, it started years and years before this moment where God said to Abram, go. You see, Abram was, raised in the ancient city of Ur. His dad, Terah, worshipped the moon god that governed the city of Ur, which meant the entire family would worship this moon god. It's in Ur, which is a city located about 200 miles southeast of Baghdad. It's close to the modern country of Kuwait. It was in Ur where they built the great ziggurat of Ur, which was built to worship this moon god. Well, one of Abram's brothers, Haran, died, and Abram's dad, Terah, decided to move, well, the entire family from Ur to a city named Haran. And the interesting connection between Ur and Haran is Haran was a religious epicenter where they were worshiping a very close, similar pagan religion, well, that you can find in Ur. They were worshiping a type of a moon god. And, well, that's where the family settled down. And that's where Abram's dad, Terah, dies. And it's when his dad dies, well, that's when God shows up to Abram and says, go to the land I will show you. And I think about that moment. Abram, raised in this family that worshiped this, well, not just the pagan deity of the moon god, but all the supporting pagan gods that they would worship. And God chooses to meet Abram right where he was. You see, we can't overlook that part of the story. Abram wasn't following the one true God. He wasn't worshiping the one true God. Abram was just going on with his life, how he was taught, how he was raised, and God chose to meet him right there. And I want you to know, and if you hear nothing else throughout this entire series, I want you to know that God chooses to meet people right where they are. God chooses to meet you right where you are. What you believe and what you don't believe, what you understand and you don't understand, no matter what's going on in your life right now, I want you to know that God meets you right where you are. And God wants to go on a journey with you. God wants to have a relationship with you. So when God looks at Abram and says, go to the land, I will show you. Abram and Sarai said yes, and they picked up everything. And it wasn't just the two of them. I mean, Abram was a very successful businessman. He had a lot of cattle, a lot of livestock. And so he had people working for him to manage the herds, and he had people working to help feed all of his employees, and he had soldiers to help protect his empire. This is a massive, massive business that they were moving out of Haran to the land God would show them. And, well, with Abram and Sarai was Abram's nephew, Lot, whose dad was Haran, who had died. And so Lot, with all of his herds and of all of his employees, came with Abram as well. And God led him down to the ancient city of Shechem. And it was there at Shechem, which was a significant both political and religious epicenter of the area. It was in Shechem that God comes to Abram and says, hey, your offspring is going to inherit the land I'm showing you. The offspring were, oh, by the way, Abram and Sarai still can't have kids. And from Shechem, God leads them down to this area of two cities, Bethel and Ai. And they set up camp right south of Bethel. And what's interesting about this name Bethel is actually two ancient Hebrew words. The first three letters, the B-E-T, stands for temple or house. And the last two letters, the E and the L, stands for, well, God. Now, specifically, it was for the Canaanite god El. But you'll see those two letters, L, throughout the ancient Jewish scriptures, our Old Testament. You'll see names for the one true God, like Elohim and El Shaddai. And there at Bethel, the temple of God, a Canaanite God, Abram, you know what he does? He sets up an altar, not to the Canaanite God. No, 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 no. He sets up an altar to the one true God and calls out God's name there. And that, don't forget, because we're going to come back to that moment, because it's a significant moment in the life of Abram and Sarai. Well, from there, God leads them all the way down to what's called the Negev. The Negev, it could be translated desert or parched land. It could also be translated as southland or land that is south. And God was showing them all the land that his offspring was going to inhabit. God was showing them all the land that he was going to lead them to, all the land that's going to make all the nations blessed through him. All the nations. Now, before we continue on to to land on the second question. Let me ask you this question first. Have you ever done something for God? Like Thanksgiving time, you wake up early, you take the whole family, and you give up your Thanksgiving morning to go feed other people that, well, maybe they just can't afford Thanksgiving. So you want to serve the community. And you're like, hey, God, we're serving people today. We're giving up part of our Thanksgiving, all of our Thanksgiving for you, God. Have you ever decided to like join one of our teams? Maybe it's greeters, ushers, maybe you can play an instrument or sing, so our worship team, or you love pouring into kids or teenagers. You're like, hey, God, I'm going to serve your church, right? And you're like, hey, God, I'm doing this for you. Have you ever maybe given something like money, like to the church, understanding that generosity is an act of worship and the church is God's vehicle to tell all people about Jesus? Have you ever... Well, maybe even you took the step to give a percentage to God. And you're like, hey, God, I'm gonna give generously to you. Act of worship because I believe in the mission of your church. Have you ever done something for God? Probably most of you have said yes. Well, let me expand this question just a bit more. Have you ever done something for God expecting God to do something for you? Now, I know that doesn't feel real good. I mean, the first part did, not the second part. But to be very transparent, I mean, I'm a professional do something for God-er person, if that's a complete phrase. I don't think it is. But my entire life is doing things for God. I mean, when I say, God, hey, I'm going to give my life to helping lead within your church, your vehicle, your strategy to tell everyone about Jesus. When I say that, I mean, that's my entire life is doing things for God. I mean, show up early, stay up late, on the phone, helping people, messages, you name it. I'm always doing things for God. And I just know for me, I'm being very transparent. There's times where I'm like, hey, God, I've done a lot for you. Could you do something for me? Hey, God, I really helped out that family, that person. Hey, God, could you? Hey, God, I'm giving a whole lot of time, a whole lot of energy. I mean, this is more than just 9 to 5. Hey, God, could you do a little bit more for me? Have you ever had that thought? I'm sure I'm not the only one. And I just wonder if Abram and Sarai had that thought when they said yes to go. If they thought, hey, God, along the way, could you do something? Now, they knew the blessing, they knew the promise, but that promise to make your name great was so massive. That promise that all your offspring would inhabit the land when they couldn't have one kid. It was so big, I just don't think they could wrap their mind, their heart around that promise. And I just wonder if they were just saying, okay, God, we're going. What are you going to do for us? Now, as Abram and Sarai said yes to God, and they went, and God was showing them the land. Quickly, three life events are going to crash into their world. Two of them, they don't handle real well. But the third one, we'll get to that in a moment. So the author of Genesis tells us, as they made their way to the Negev, that well, a famine enters in the land. And it wasn't a small famine. I mean, in fact, it was a severe famine hits the land. And the author of Genesis includes, like, not only the famine hits the land, it lets us know that Abram, well, leaves the Negev and goes to Egypt. More on Egypt in a moment. This leads us quickly to the first life event, that famine hits the land. And for Abram and Sarai and all their employees and all their livestock and his entire business empire, which was quite significant, this famine, it was something. It got their attention. It was something that created so much concern within Abram. Why? Because, well, he was trying to think about how to keep all of his animals alive. He was trying to think about how to keep all of his employees alive and his wife alive. Like, he was concerned about how just to provide. You see, the thing with the famine was, it's nothing Abram controlled. It's not like he could have done anything about it. I mean, it happened to him. It was an external event. And here's the thing, we all know 2020 has been filled with external events. Like, none of us have been able to control any of it. And it came crashing into his world. And we all understand what that feels like. When all of a sudden we wake up one day and it's all shifted. When we wake up and we're concerned about how are we going to provide? How are we going to survive? Now, I get some of you. I mean, your job just got dissolved. For some of you, the rumors about your company, your plant shutting down, I mean, it's daily. You're just waiting to hear the official word, and you start thinking about, how am I going to feed my family? How am I going to pay my mortgage? How am I going to, put gas in my car? For some of you, you're just in a constant state of just going, how is this going to impact my life, my family's life? How am I going to lead through this? And that was for Abram and Sarai. They're like, how are you just going to make our way through? But what does Abram do? Remember, God was clear. Go to the land, I will show you. And God did. Shechem, Bethel, and Ai, and the Negev. God was showing them the land. But what does Abram do? Abram stops following God, and he goes, we're going to Egypt. Hey, God, I know that's not where we're supposed to go, but I got to do something myself. I got to lead. I mean, God, we were following you, but the famine's really bad, so we're going to stop following your direction just for a period of time, and I'm going to take this, I'm going to control the situation. So Abram stops following God, and he leads his family into Egypt, which, well, actually sets up the second life event. And so as they're approaching Egypt, Abram, well, he looks at his wife Sarai, and this is what he says. I mean, it's really beautiful. He goes, I know what a beautiful woman you are. So if you're married, hey guys, I mean, that's a great thing to say to your wife. If you're dating someone, hey guys, it's something great to say to your girlfriend. If you're engaged, like, this is amazing. And Abram should have just shut up right there, which for most of us guys, that's just good wisdom. Anyway, like, we should just make a comment and then just shut up, right? Like, when we have it right, let's just shut up and make sure we're right. And Abram, well, he doesn't stop. He looks at his wife and says, hey, you're beautiful. But what he says next, well, it's amazing. He goes, when the Egyptians see you, they will say, this is his wife. Then they will kill me, but we'll let you live. So this is his solution. He goes, say you're my sister so that I will be treated well for your sake and my life will be spared because of you. Huh? Yeah. Hey, honey, we're just going to convince the Egyptians you're my sister. They can take you. It's okay, but I will live. I mean, that's just horrible husband, boyfriend, fiance advice. Like, never do that. But you see, well, this leads us to the second life event. Fear causes us to make a whole lot of absurd decisions, doesn't it? Fear, the what-if scenarios. And that's what was happening within Abram. He's like, what if Pharaoh sends out his army? And what if they see how beautiful my wife is? And what if they think Pharaoh wants her for his wife? And what if they kill me? I mean, the what-if scenarios were just deafening to Abram. And when we start operating by fear, we start making horrendous decisions. What fear is in your life right now? What decisions are you making through the lens of fear? fear? Is it financial fear? Is it job security fear? Is it health fear? Is it relationship fear? Is it, what if I never get married fear? What if I never have a family fear? What if I can't find a good friend that I can trust fear? Well, what is it? You know what it is. For Abram, the fear of him dying blinded him from who he was supposed to be for his wife. But more important to that, God's promise is that they would have offspring. And if Abram's dead, well, they can't have offspring. So what happens? Pharaoh's officials come, they see Abram, because again, this wasn't just a couple people riding a horse. I mean, this is a massive business operation, cattle and livestock and workers and slaves. I mean, it's a massive thing. And they come and they see how beautiful Sarai was. And Abram's like, yep, my sister. And so they take Sarai, and Pharaoh takes her as his wife. But here's the thing. When we start making decisions out of fear, those decisions don't just impact us. Those decisions impact everyone connected to us. When we start making decisions, when we're not stepping into obedience with God, and we choose to step outside of obedience to God, guess what those decisions do? They impact the people connected to us. And the author of Genesis tells us that the Lord inflicted serious diseases, this is another word, is plagues, on Pharaoh and his household because of Abram's wife, Sarai. So if Pharaoh summoned Abram, he says, what have you done to me? Why didn't you tell me she was your wife? Why did you say she's my sister so that I took her to be my wife? Now then, here's your wife. Take her and go. You see the impact? I mean, the impact on Pharaoh and his entire household. But what do you think the impact was between Abram and Sarai, husband and wife? You see, you're either going to face your fear or you're going to face God. You can't face fear and face God at the same time. And when you choose to turn your back on fear and face God, you're saying to God, God, I trust that even though the fear and the what ifs and the unknowns that are swirling within my mind, God, I'm going to trust that you have me. I'm going to trust that you're going to lead me through it. God, I don't know what's next, but God, I'm going to trust that you do. The question is, are you going to turn your back on your fear and face a God that can lead you through anything and everything? You see, I think about this story, and twice Abram's made a mess of all of it. Yeah, he said yes to God, and then quickly he's made a mess. But what does Abram do next? Well, he leaves Egypt and heads back to, well, Bethel. And do you remember what Abram did at Bethel? Yeah, you're right. He set up an altar and he called out to God. And Abram, he goes back to Bethel, and guess what he does? He goes back to that same altar that he built. And guess what he does? He calls out to God. He's like, God, I've made a mess. Yeah, we said yes, but then I've just failed. I feel the famine hit, and I left the land that you were showing us, and then fear crept in, and God, I just overcame, I let the fear overcome me, and I didn't look to you, God. God, I faced my fear, not you, and God, I made a mess, and I hurt my wife, and I've hurt so many people, and he comes back to God and says, hey, God, I'm back. And then what happens next? Just reveals the heart of God. You see, at this point, Abram's herds had grown a lot. Partly because when he gave his wife to Pharaoh, Pharaoh paid really well for his wives. And so Pharaoh had given him a lot of cattle and livestock in payment for, his wife. And Genesis tells us that his herds had grown and he was very wealthy of silver and gold, but also that Lot's herds had grown as well. And we're told that the land could not support both of them, Lot and all of his herds, and Abram and all of his herds, while they stayed together, for their possessions were so great that they were not able to stay together. And quarreling arose between Abram's herders and Lot. And then we get this quick insight that the Canaanites and the Perizzites, these groups of people also had their herds in that part of the land. Which leads to this third life event. Friction happened between, two families. You see, we all understand relationship friction. And the further away that relationship is, the less that friction matters. You know, that person who you know through a person, if there's friction there, it doesn't really matter. If you have friction between you and your boss, that person's closer, but again, Mr. Boss, it's still distance. If it's friction between you and a really good friend, that matters. But here's what we all know. When there's friction within family, there's nothing that impacts more. When there's friction within family relationships, the emotional toll is significant. And Abram realized, hey, there's friction here. What must I do? We both can't stay in the same land. But remember, the first two life events, Abram solved on his own. But this one, something was different. And it's all connected from him coming back and at that altar saying, hey, God, you got to lead my life. And so Abram goes to Lot and says, hey, Lot, I'm going to allow you to choose. Abram and Lot both knew that there was prime land that was perfect for all of their cattle and livestock, land perfect that would support their family. And instead of Abram going, I'm choosing the best land, Abram came in an act of service, an act of generosity, and an act of love. And said to Lot, hey, Lot, I'm going to let you choose. See, that's the heart of God. A generous heart, a selfless heart, a loving heart. And Lot looked over and he chose the best land. We're actually told that, it was as green as a garden. It goes on to talk about that it looked like the land in Egypt. Incredible land. And Lot chose that land. And then, after Lot left, God comes to Abram. He goes, hey, Abram, look around from where you are to the north and south, to the east and to the west. All the land that you see, I will give to you and your offspring forever. I will make your offspring like the dust of the earth so that if anyone could count the dust, then your offspring could be counted. Go, walk through the length and breadth of the land, for I am giving it to you. God doesn't come to Abram and say, hey, you've made a colossal mess. Abram, I can't believe what you have done, the decisions you've made. No. God comes back to Abram and said, hey, Abram, I just want you to know. Yeah, that whole going to Egypt thing, you shouldn't have done that. And especially never, never, never give your wife away. That's just horrible. But Abram, I want you to know, I'm still with you, and I still love you, and my promise is still there for you. You see, you think about these three life events, famine, fear, and friction. It all leads to the second question. Second question is, will you overcome? You see, famine is the external impact, the things you just can't control, the things that just crash into your world. You didn't cause it. Just one day it happens, and you find yourself just going, what am I going to do? Fear is that thing within you. It's internal, and it's loud, and it's deafening. The third one, we all know the impact of relational friction, especially the closer that relationship is to us. The question is, will you overcome? And the only way you overcome is what Abram did when he went back to Bethel, to that altar, and he called out to God and he faced God. See, when you keep your eyes focused on God, I'm telling you, it doesn't mean that the fear just is never there. No. When you face God, it means you turn your back on your fear and say, hey, God, I'm going to keep that fear at bay because I know you have me and I trust that you are leading me and that you are for me. When you face God, no matter what the relational friction is, your heart is to be generous and your heart is to serve and your heart is to love first. And when you face God, no matter how bad the external world gets, no matter how difficult it is and how scary it is and all the unknown and what's coming our way externally, you face God and say, hey, God, you're sovereign God and you have it and you have me. Will you overcome? Will you overcome? And the answer to that is if you choose to face God. Because remember, God is with you and God is for you. Let's pray. Lord, I just ask, no matter the life events that are crashing into every one of these people's life right now, that, Lord, they'll know that you're with them. You're a God that chooses to meet us where we are and to walk with us and to guide us and be present in our lives. So, Lord, no matter what we're dealing with, I pray that we'll say yes to overcoming by keeping our eyes locked on you. In your name I pray.